Well, I think I'm ready to start.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, we have our equipment all set up. My name is Susan Shiner. I'm a student at Wayne State University, and I have the pleasure to interview Carol McLean today for an oral history archive. We're doing a study of various individuals who have lived and participated in life in the Cass Corridor at various times, and I have in my notes 1970 to present. Now, today is November 18th, 2015. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you.
I have some questions, and I know you supplied me with an interesting background of what spring was like on Canfield Street. Do you want to give me a 1970?
Well, I don't know. There's no date on that because it had to have been before our streetscape went in. It was in the mid-1970s sometime.
Okay. Well, do you want to just give me a little idea of it, or do you want to read it out loud, or neither?
Why don't I read it out loud?
Okay. I'm sharing this with the researcher because Carol shared it with me, and I think it gives you a nice little image of what life was like at that moment in time.
Spring has, this is from a letter, it's an excerpt I wrote to friends that were on sabbatical in Europe during the spring, mid-70s in Detroit in our old Victorian house. Still very blighted street, deteriorated neighborhood. Anyway, this is the letter. Spring has arrived in Detroit, leaving us awash in a sea of mud, garbage, broken glass, and dog turds. We've abandoned the little sled that's transported the girls all winter, and now just wade ankle-deep through winos and broken glass, cause-effect, to school. The city noises are changing, too. No more engines straining to get over the ice. Now the sound of large trucks bouncing and clanking in the ruts of our torn-up street. The street was under construction because they were going to put the cobblestones in that are now there that make the street so beautiful. But at that time, the street was still very torn up. Okay. The city noises are changing too. No more engines straining over. Oh, I read that. Okay. From above come the wails of a kitty, not ours, high up in the tree next to our house. The city will rescue an animal or human only if the tree is located on the sidewalk and not on private property. We are happy to have any spring at all. Good old March came in like a lion and went out like a dragon. We had terribly cold weather in those days. It seems to have gotten better over the years to some extent, or maybe it's just because we leave during the winter for a certain amount of time now. Good old March came in like a lion and went out like a dragon. We had an ice storm at Easter. Little Peter Cottontail came skiing down the bunny trail. This is a marvelous climate for cross-country skiing, although the terrain isn't very scenic. Wasn't then. The Cass Corridor flowers are in full bloom. They're called honeys. And then in the letter I had a sketch of a smiling curly-haired lady of the night with a shoulder bag, short skirt, and a t-shirt with a giant bee emblazoned on it. The caption on the t-shirt reads, "Be sweet, eat your honey." We charter members of the concerned citizens of the Cass Corridor march from our Restore the Block meeting to our Save the Downtown meeting to our Reform the Schools meeting. And sometimes we stop to relax on our front stoop and admire the crocuses growing around the edge of the crater, which used to be our flower bed before the dogs got to it. Martin and I sit on our stoop and play at remembering what it was like not living across the street for a 24-hour gas station, which is gone, thank goodness. When mail was delivered every day, which it is now. When we didn't live in such an ecologically balanced environment. Our mice keep down the roaches, the cats get the mice, the dogs get the cats and an occasional mailman or meter reader, and the cars get the dogs. Happiness, we are sure, is a car that works in January. And we are proud of ourselves. How many people do you know who could have achieved this unique lifestyle by age 40? That's wonderful. What it was like.
Well, I think that was definitely worth sharing. It gives me a sense of really what that moment in time was like.
And how much it's improved since then, thanks to very good hard work of our neighbors and our community that sank their own time and money into the neighborhood. They each person that came in, that moved in, put their own efforts into improving their property. And now we have tour buses that go down the street, you know, to look at the houses and photographers, and it's quite amazing, the change.
It gives one a perspective on things.
Right.
I didn't realize the cobblestone, the brick stone, the brick paving. How should I say it?
I don't know what to call it exactly. It is cobblestones. They were stones that were stored at a fort in Detroit. Maybe you know the name better than I do. There was a lady that lived across the street from us named Beulah Groen, who was the guru of our block and of the whole revival restoration process. And she knew about these stones, and she arranged to have them set on our street. So they're historic.
They're historic.
Yeah,
right.
And I can't remember where they came from them. Perhaps the person that interviews my husband will find out. I'll ask him if he remembers.
Okay. Well, so we're talking about Canfield.
Uh-huh.
I want to point that out. I'm not sure that you mentioned it earlier, but we've been discussing it.
Right.
It's right near Wayne State University.
4 blocks south. Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the project, the neighborhood called the Cass Corridor.
Right.
And our project for the archive is really designed to encompass life and the history of the Cass Corridor. So physically you saw changes, and they came about through the contributions and dedications of the people who, the residents.
Neighbors in the communities, that's right, all around. I think one of the things that interests me now is it used to be that going north of Canfield Street toward Wayne State was not too bad, but going south toward the downtown was just awful. And now we're starting to see that change too. People have invested in building restaurants and new apartments, and we hear that there's a shortage of living space in the Cass Corridor. We're now called Midtown, by the way. Those of us who have lived here forever will always think of it as the Cass Corridor. We're now referred to as Midtown. And I think Dan Gilbert probably had a lot to do with that, and a lot of young people moving in now.
Yes.
So it's a changing neighborhood, and we know that gentrification is a pejorative word in the vocabulary of a lot of people, but we wear it as a badge of honor. We waited so long for these changes.
You know, really,
yeah,
it's wonderful to get a perspective.
Right.
You know, I've used that word a few minutes ago, but it's true. Well, I have a list of questions here.
Sure.
So what I'll do is I will use them as a guide and open up to whatever you feel is important. And I've already gotten a sense that some of my questions are fine, but not necessarily as wonderful as what you brought in. Well, you mentioned that you came to the Cass Corridor in 1974?
Yes.
Okay. What brought you here?
The fact that neither one of us liked to drive, and Martin is a professor at Wayne State University, and he could walk to work from there. And the fact that I love cities, having spent my teenage years in a Long Island suburb, I developed a visceral hatred of suburbia. So I prefer to be in the city where there's more diversity, and just, I think, overall, a better value system.
Well put. So you came with your husband, Martin.
Yes.
And he's a professor at Wayne State University.
Yes.
And what is his field?
Chemistry. He was a chemistry professor, yeah.
And did you meet at University of California,
no,
Berkeley?
We met in California through a mutual friend. And he's from Texas, I'm from New York. We lived happily ever after. We met in California, lived happily ever after in Detroit. That's really what
it's
happened.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you have a degree from University of California, Berkeley.
In English.
And then later, when you came to Detroit, you studied Spanish?
That's right, yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about your educational experience both in Berkeley and here in Detroit.
Actually, I really enjoyed my educational experience at Wayne State. It seemed to be much more personal. I had wonderful professors. You know, I loved them. And I was so much more ready to learn as a 30, 40-year-old than I was, you know, at Berkeley when I was younger. Berkeley was much larger, more personal, and there were all kinds of crazy things going on. It was a year when we got tear gassed, and psychedelia was happening. The Vietnam War protests were going on, a whole bunch of stuff, and it was almost hard to concentrate on what you were doing in school. But in Berkeley, it was a wonderful experience. In Detroit, it was a wonderful experience. I really enjoyed Wayne State. I got to know my professors, I liked my classmates, and I was much more into learning.
So you studied Spanish, right?
I studied Spanish, basically.
You had a master's degree in Spanish?
Uh-huh, I did.
So what was it like in the CAS corridor during that time when you were a student at Wayne State, which was about the 70s, 80s?
I was raising children at the time, so it was still a bit scary, I'll put it that way. The neighborhoods weren't that great, and you were very often going to run into panhandlers and derelicts. I don't mean to be looking down my nose at them, but it was more of a poor neighborhood where crime was more rampant. We got broken into, I guess, several times. So we had to be on our guard most of the time, you know, when you're just out on the streets. And I had two children I was raising. I couldn't send them outside just to play. They had to have arranged play dates so that they would be safe. I think the first time I ever let them go out alone was to a neighborhood store two blocks away, where I know the people in the store, it was a family-run store, would look after them. They were there.
So you were appropriately cautious.
Yeah.
But
we did. It's not pleasant to have burglaries in your house.
No.
So we were cautious, and the kids had I used to tease them that they grew up with burglars at the back door and building inspectors at the front door. And so many holes in the house that the animals wouldn't come in the winter unless we built them a fire in the fireplace. Beautiful mahogany fireplace. You know, the house was beautiful. And we underwent a lot of construction, you know, while they were growing up, too. So it was a unique experience. I'm pleased the way they turned out.
Tell me a little bit about your children and how they turned out.
Right. Well, they don't live in Detroit. I was happy for them when they went to college to experience other places. They went to Cass Tech here. Mm-hmm. They went to Burton International School to go lightly, one in each school. And then they went to Cass Tech for high school, which was a very interesting experience for them. And then when they went to college, one went to New York and went to the Parsons School of Design, and the other, who was an avid dog sledder, went to the University of Minnesota. So the one that went to New York is now living in Chicago with her husband, and the one I sent to Minnesota is still there,
okay.
Basically. But they love coming home. They really feel an attachment to this neighborhood and the community, and they stay in touch with their friends on Facebook, and they want to visit everything when they're here, and they enjoy seeing the changes.
That sounds like they had a very good upbringing
We hope so. They had what I consider diversity of race and class in their upbringing, which is important to me. They got to know all kinds of people. The CAS corridor, and Burton School especially, was kind of a residential area for foreign exchange students, for Chinese who had restaurants there. It was the old Chinatown, basically. They had every possible kind of nationality represented in the school at Burton, which I thought was, you know, very interesting.
Well, I do have a question here about Burton. So your children, do you have two daughters?
Yes,
and they attended school there. And did you teach there at any time?
Or? No, but I was an active parent.
Mm-hmm.
I did, I think, at times go in and provide special activities for the kids. I would take them to something special at the Art Institute, or arrange from people for the Audubon Society to speak in the assembly. So I was active until I really started going to school heavily, and then I needed the time to pursue my own studies at that point.
I see. So tell me about your career. After you pursued your studies, did you work as a teacher in the Detroit Public Schools?
I did. I was an inner city high school teacher for about 5 years. And then I retired. What I did basically was work to get my girls through college. We needed the extra money. So I did that. And it's a whole other topic to talk about the Detroit Public Schools. And
I understand.
The kind of serious mess that was going on. I'm talking about the kids. I'm talking about the administration of the schools. I think it was a feeling our way situation at that point in the 70s and 80s. And I was not happy there. particularly. But, you know, it was an interesting experience, what can I say?
Well, what were the highlights, even though I know you were not happy? Did you get any special recognitions while you were in there? The highlight was completing your 5 years.
The recognition was from the kids that would tell me, you know, you're the best teacher I ever had, and that kind of thing was, you know, very rewarding. But it was very exhausting, and I thought it would be best to leave it to the younger generation that was coming up. They had a lot more energy than I did at that time. Okay, that was an exhausting job. There were teachers falling like flies while I was teaching. So,
okay, well, I think you've covered a lot about that. It sounds like the Burton International School was a wonderful environment for the community.
I think it was,
And enriched your lives as a resident of the Cass Corridor. Is it still open now, or...?
I think what happened, and I'm really sorry about this, was long after we left, a building on the Burton School property was torn down and was found to have asbestos coverings of some kind, which got all over the property, and so the school was closed. I'm really heartsick about this. It was going to be our legacy to the community to have this wonderful school that was still operating. So Burton still exists, but not in our community. It was moved somewhere else.
I see.
I'm not sure where.
I see. Okay. I guess I did a little research on it, but I didn't know the whole story. Well, let's switch the topic a minute. I hear you have a famous uncle.
Detroit famous, yes.
Detroit famous, Irving Bluestone.
Yes.
Who was a leader in the labor movement.
Yes.
And
he was Walter Reuther's administrative assistant for a while, and then became the vice president of the General Motors Division for the United Auto Workers. A wonderful, wonderful man. Yeah.
That's wonderful to have that connection.
It was. We really loved, he was the only family in the area, and we really loved having him and his wife live. I guess they were down in Lafayette Park for a while. She was somebody who volunteered reading for the blind. They were just very service-oriented people.
They sound like people I would have liked to
have met. Yeah, I think so. Everybody loved them.
Well, do you have any stories in addition to what you've told me about your uncle that you'd like to share?
I'm sorry, I didn't come prepared to do that. I have
a
blurry memory now at this age.
I think the idea that, you know, he was service oriented and that
community minded, and he loved Detroit, and he was just a wonderful human being in general. We were very fortunate to have him in the family, and then he opened his arms to us when we moved to Detroit. We enjoyed visiting with them. Sure there are lots of stories.
If at some point we stumble back to it, I'm open-minded. It's nice to acknowledge, mm-hmm. and it does play a role. It ties into the theme of neighborhoods and families.
He was very instrumental in getting the Reuther Library started here. I think it was his baby, his idea. So that sort of hooks into Wayne State University and the job you're doing today, probably.
Ties in a nice way.
He's the one that would have all the stories about the early growth of the labor union movement and the goons that attacked them. And he was very close to Victor Reuther, who had acid thrown in his face, you know, by I think Ford people when they first started to start this union. I'm glad he didn't really live long enough to see it being denigrated like it is now, with right to work movements, you know, all over the country. It was very strong when he was a member.
I hear what you're saying. Okay, so we talked a little bit when you read your portion of your letter, about some of the issues, some of the causes in the neighborhood.
Right, now my husband is going to be able to give you a much better perspective on that. He was much more active, and I'm not a meetings person. You know, I'm sorry, I belong to the old school that believes that meetings are events where minutes are kept and hours are lost. So I did a little bit of it, you know, but he really has a much better political and historical perspective on what was going on at that time. So I was just sort of the mad housewife and trying to keep up with my kids and my schoolwork.
Well, it sounds like you had a nice blend of things going on. Were there other?
It was very interesting. I love Detroit in that there seemed to be nothing superficial about it, or phony, or cutesy, or touristy. It was all real people trying to better their lives and the community, and I really enjoyed that, and being around them, and we were all sort of sisters and brothers in sweat. one of the things we had to do when my kids went to school is pick up glass and garbage on the school ground. The fact that everybody wanted to see these schools a success. You mentioned Burton, but actually one of my children went to Golightly, which was another school we were instrumental in founding. Mm-hmm. It got started, I guess, right after my kids were in nursery school, and my husband was very active in getting that off the ground, too, with the education department at Wayne State. They were involved, and we shared quarters with one of the Detroit public schools, and we parents just went out and cleaned up the school grounds, which we had to do in our own yards anyway, to try to make it safe for kids to play out there. So it was a joint community effort, I think, to try to get things moving here.
So the Golightly School was through Wayne State. Was it through Monteith
yes.
College or
not Monteith? It was through the Wayne State College of Education.
Okay.
Sharon Elliott and Helen Sukara, I think, were very active in getting that school going. And it moved from our community to one just slightly to the north of us, I guess, into Balch School later on when it got to the junior high school stage. I think Golightly still exists, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, I have some notes here that I took. Knowing that historical preservation was a big part of your neighborhood, and that you reinforced that by seeing and saying all about what you're seeing now. There's some other movements we didn't talk about, the art scene that was happening and became widely recognized, civil rights movement, women's movement. What other of those things do you recall that you'd like to talk about?
Well, Cascard always had artisans. We had a few living on the block when we moved there. They had since left, but we've always enjoyed the galleries, makeshift or whatever, that have gone up. We have beautiful graffiti still in the neighborhood if anybody wants to see it. And of course, the Center for Creative Studies was near the house. Also, one of the things that I found recently was that I walked into one of the new coffee shops that have popped up near the Art Institute, and I saw sketches of our houses on the walls, and there were many more for sale, so I was able to buy some for our neighbors. And apparently the man that did them was an Australian who was head of transportation design at CCS. And he loved our street, and he came and drew the houses. So that's a wonderful legacy for us. We have them.
Oh, lovely.
and it's nice. Yeah. The women's movement was something that I knew more about in Berkeley. I guess it was well on its way by the time I got to the Cass Corridor. But as I say, we were at Berkeley at a time when the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and the women's movement were going on. It was a crazy time. That's why it was hard to concentrate on classes. But
yeah,
here we kind of subsided into, let's do something for the city. We got a little bit more localized, in what we were involved in. There was so much, that we needed to do. My husband was told, what Canfield Street is.
Yes.
My husband was told with regret by one of the faculty, "We used to very often go to Mario's for lunch," he said, "but now you just can't walk there anymore." We were living across the street. So this is the kind of thing we needed to fix. Right? And now, we've got a ton of new restaurants, shops, galleries going up all around us, which is very interesting. It's about time. I'm glad it's happening.
Yes.
Come down and enjoy the neighborhood.
I have. Now I know you, and that you live there. So tell For the purposes of the archive, let's talk about some of those galleries, shops, restaurants that are new or newer. Mario's has been there all along.
Yes, and we've seen Traffic Jam also, although it's expanded. Yeah, and it has another sort of branch that's across the street in its parking lot called the Motor City Brewery. And there are new little galleries that have opened up right on Canfield Street, the Bird's Nest. And I can't remember the name of the other city. I can't think of the name of the other one right now. I'm sorry.
But they're right next to the Motor City Brewery?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, and one's called the Bird's Nest.
Right.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of the other one. There were shops there, so it's, you know. Then Shinola has moved in, and the Jolly Pumpkin, the restaurant. Selden Standard, which I think used to be an old gas station, which is a few blocks away. There are many restaurants that have come and gone right by the Art Institute. The latest one is Chartreuse, which features a Detroit cocktail manufactured at the Detroit Athletic Club called The Last Word. Let's see if I can get all the ingredients. It's gin and chartreuse and lime juice and maraschino liqueur, and you pass out after you've had a few sips.
The Last Word.
Yeah, okay. That's what it's called. Yes, and we've seen a lot of things sort of start up and leave, but these seem to be doing pretty well now, which is wonderful. We enjoy that. A number of little kitchen shops that have opened up on Cass Corridor, beauty salons. It's amazing.
And this is within the last,
5 years?
5 years.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, there have been other things that have sort of tried to start up and left when they didn't take off. There is a new sports bar now that is doing a gangbusters business. And I'm sorry, I can't think of the name of it, but it used to be the Agave, and before that it was Gregory's. And it's, you know, it's turned hands a number, before that I think it was Teddy's.
Is it on Canfield or is it on?
It's on Canfield and Woodward.
And Woodward, okay.
Yeah. I just can't think of the name of it, I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Too much new stuff. But if you're going to a ball game, you know, by all means drop by. It's got entertainment, I think, also Saturday nights. So you were seeing a whole new revival.
So
the Bronx Bar is something that's been there forever. And yet it's become more upscale. It used to be somewhat dingy, but we loved it in the neighborhood. Now, it's got outdoor seating. And
so that you probably never thought you would hear anyone ask you the question, has it become too gentrified?
Some people think so. I don't think so. You know, I don't think so. We still have garbage on the street and panhandlers and poor people living in the neighborhood. They haven't been, you know, they haven't been forced out. And there are people that sort of miss the way things used to be, but they forget that it was somewhat dangerous. And I don't miss that at all. I really don't mind if I forgot to lock my back door that nothing happened. You know, so I'm very happy with the way things are going. I think we're still a very representative Detroit neighborhood. And I like to see the city come back because, well, it's more tax money and then things sort of get better and better. And we can have, have you seen this new book called The Once in a Great City? I think his name is Maris or something like that, that's written the book, and it took place in 62 and 63, and he talks a little bit about what a great city it used to be. And we think that's gonna come back.
I know the book, I'm trying to remember the author.
Marinus.
Right, and I think he's been promoting the book. He has a lot of connection to the city because he was born here, but then eventually moved to another.
He left. I mean, I'd like to see a book come out which says, once again in a great city.
I think
we're getting there, little by little. It's a source of pride for us, you know, to see the changes and to see people want to live in our area, a lot of young people moving in. What we need to see happen is for the schools to get better, because once these young people have children and they have to be sent to school, that becomes a problem. I think Kim might have told to herself that she had a hunt, you know, for the right school to send her daughter. And I think Rachel's in a parochial school now. I'd like to see the public schools step in again, and whether they're alternative schools or magnet schools or public schools, to come in and be able to educate the children here. And then my uncle's children went to school in Detroit. They went to Mumsey, I guess. and felt that they had a great education. So we want to see that come back again.
Well, I think that's a valid point, and because
we want you to come down and move in.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I might take you up on it.
It's more interesting than wherever you live. But you want a good education, you know, for your kids, and you want to feel safe on the streets.
So I guess it sounds like those were issues for you then when your children were growing up, and that you were able to navigate that.
Yes, that's a very good word for it. We navigated a lot and found that the pluses outweighed the minuses. As I say, we really, I hate to keep returning to this word, but we love the diversity and the effort and just the goodwill that people felt toward the neighborhood and in the neighborhood to try to better the situation. And it was already, you know, it already had a lot of fine points, as you say, in terms of artists and professors and people that you just wanted to know.
And are many of
that were not escaping racial and economic groups that they didn't want to be a part of. So there was a lot of really good feeling, you know, around where we were, and I liked that.
I spoke too soon. You said something very important. That it was a group of people that had a lot of interests, artists, professors, and values that matched yours.
Yes, that's exactly right.
In that they wanted to pursue a life that had value, but not to escape.
That's right. That's
from
exactly
something
right.
That they didn't like.
That's right. There you go. I think you said it better than I could. That's why I brought you here.
Well, I'm glad I could be helpful. But you're very helpful in describing your experience there and how it's changed. Now, what do you wish to convey to future generations of the city of Detroit? And I know you encouraged me to consider moving, or... I hear that as an open invitation to many others.
Yes, I think so. I think the more people that want to reoccupy Detroit, you know, the better for the city, better for the schools, better for the housing, better for the economy. You know, we'd like to see that happen. We got tired of sitting on the roof with our shotgun waiting for the Renaissance. We think it's happening now. There were always vital neighborhoods like Greektown,
right.
You know, Lafayette Park area, people that wanted to be here. We want more people to want to be here. City life is wonderful. It's homogeneity was never my thing. It's like lots of different people.
Oh, wonderful. Let me see. So I hear you saying that education is a really important component, and that's interesting because you were a teacher in the Detroit public school system.
I did not have a solution for the problems that we're having in education. I think part of the problem was people wanted to gloss over the problems and pretend they didn't have any. If you call a school an education center, you know, that makes everything very smooth and polished, and it really wasn't. We had kids with serious problems. That weren't being dealt with. You know, that it made it hard maybe for other kids in the same environment to learn. I don't have the solution. I don't think anybody has. I know that education, I think, is the most important way of escaping poverty, basically. And there were always some that sort of rose above their immediate environment to succeed. I would have liked to have seen more of that. And didn't really know how to make that happen. All you can do is, you know, work with the ones you've got.
Right, right. And as you said earlier, that is another subject that can be addressed.
And it's countrywide. It's not just Detroit.
Right.
I think people are trying to solve it in different ways, and nobody's nobody's come up with a solution on how you can really educate an underclass that has no privileges at home, where they're living maybe with a parent one week and a grandparent the next, or in foster care, or they just don't have the support that they need to get a really good education. But you have to have it. Can't all be done in the school.
Right, right. So it sounds like there was an educational aspect to the environment.
Well, I'm a great believer in public education, and we did everything we could to make our girls successful within the public schools. It's true they were alternative schools and magnet schools, although Castech has been there for a long time. But with good parents, you know, and a good parent group, you can really make things succeed. My daughter's got the same scores on their SATs as my niece, who lives in a very rich suburban Long Island neighborhood. So we were proud of that. So much comes with working with teachers and parents. And I would like to see an upgrade in Detroit's education system. Just don't know. I just don't really have any answer I can give to you.
Right. And
how
I think
that happened.
I think that's valid. And it's in part the answer to my question of what do you wish to convey to future generations, one part about the city of Detroit and the other part specifically the CAST corridor. But I think what I hear you saying is that, you know, move to Detroit and that will help the educational system. And then
so,
the second part is once you do, you know, make an effort or expect or address.
And work with others
to make the educational system better.
Right. I mean, one of the things that's so nice is that the housing in Detroit is so cheap. It's attracting people from New York, the whole artist community in New York City and Chicago. You know, they find it's cheaper rents here. So they want to come in and refurbish these buildings. And I'm just wanting them to stay after they have children, that's all.
I think that's an important insight.
Yeah.
Because you were part of that experience, your children were part of it, and were able to succeed, but you see it as a greater process.
Yes, and it's an answer for any city that's suffering in the Rust Belt, I think, from none. I think Cleveland has been through the same thing. Minneapolis, maybe not so much, but Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, all have these cities that kind of suffered, you know, from the deindustrialization of America, and we'd like to see these cities come back.
Okay, well, I think I have had, it was nice hearing your experiences, your views, your insights, and is there something else that I didn't mention?
You're a wonderful interviewer, very accessible, very approachable.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't think I was going to have anything to say at all, because at this age, my memory is so fuzzy, I couldn't remember what I would remember, but you made things very comfortable and very, very easy to express.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I find you're very articulate and relaxed and insightful.
Thank you.
And enjoy hearing your perspective.
Thank you.
Well, I'm quiet now because I don't want to end, but it seems as though the conversation has
That's
come
fine.
To a
yeah,
natural
I think.
End.
I wasn't sure what your timeline was for this interview, but I think we've covered pretty much, you know, what I would have to say about things in that era of the CAST corridor. We saw some wonderful things happen. We've seen a transformation in our own home. When we moved in, we didn't have wall-to-wall floors or floor-to-ceiling walls. we had quite a ways to come, and we're still working on it. These are forever projects.
Now, you say you're in a Victorian home?
Yes.
A French Victorian home?
No. It's American Victorian. English Victorian.
I don't know where I heard that word. French, but
it has beautiful mahogany woodwork and two fireplaces and high ceilings, and you know it was a total ruin when we moved in. So we've gradually brought it around to we went from primitive to comfortable, and we're trying to move it from comfortable to beautiful.
And what year was it built? In the
1879.
Right.
So we've passed our 100th anniversary, and we're moving on. And you take one of these houses, it is kind of a lifetime project, because there's always something you can do to it. We're working on our attic right now. We have a bunch of construction going on. It was a flow we never touched all the time we were living there, and it became full of all our old stuff that we didn't want to deal with, you know, like attics tend to be. And the walls were falling down, the ceilings, and it's a beautiful space. So now we've cleared everything out, and we're rebuilding it, and hopefully we're trying to get all our grandchildren. It'll be a dormitory for our grandchildren if they all want to visit us at once and visit with each other.
Oh, it sounds like it will be magical for them.
We're putting in a bathroom.
So tell me about your grandchildren.
Oh.
How many grandchildren do you have?
We have four, and of course, they're all wonderful. I'm perfectly objective about that.
Certainly.
Do you have grandchildren?
Not yet. No.
Okay.
So
where does your son live?
Well, I'll tell you, but...
let's talk about me. I should be asking you.
My son lives in Toronto, but when we turn the tape recorder off, I'll expand more.
Right.
So what ages are your grandchildren?
They are... I think it's... They are 12. Two of them are 10, and one is 8.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Lovely so, ages. Very
yes.
Nice.
Yeah. And so you probably enjoy, of course you are. You're making a big space for them.
Yes. And they enjoy each other. So, you know, that would be nice. We'd love to have them all together.
And they must love the home that their mothers grew up in. And
yeah. I think the mothers enjoy it too, going back and seeing all the improvements and the changes. They really do. They have roots in Detroit, which is really nice. I get to follow them a little bit on Facebook, and they always follow the Detroit news. They'll publish something they've seen that has to do with Detroit, something new that's happening downtown or an event that's happening here. So I think they have very firm ties here. Did you grow up in this area?
Well, I like that you're asking me questions.
Yeah, but you're the one being interviewed, right?
I'm going to share with you what I can and when we finish up.
Okay.
But I was born and raised in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
But my story is a little different from yours in that regard. All right, well, I will ask you to read... you read this already. Is there one line here that you want to finish with from your original piece?
Okay. I think I finished.
Okay.
And then, just that was then, you know, now is now. We enjoyed it, even though my tone was slightly tongue-in-cheek when I was writing. But we wouldn't have stayed if we didn't thought it was a wonderful project and like being where we were.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Dick.